So a scientist takes body parts from dead people and builds a living person. Does the story, so far fictional, sound familiar? It should. That is the story of Frankenstein, Mary Shelley's novel about Dr. Victor Frankenstein and the creature he constructs in a laboratory. The movies of the last century did a lot to form our image of the creature, you know, the green skin, the flat head, the bolts in the neck. But we keep telling the story two centuries after Mary Shelley entertained friends and family with it. Recent case in point, the BBC series The Frankenstein Chronicles.
Do subjects ever move?
The energy persisting beyond death.
No, Mr. Mallet, they're dead.
Now, his reforms might well put the grave robbers out of business, but they will also divide this nation.
You think it was placed there deliberately?
I saw that thing.
Looking for a monster, a beast with the face of a man.
Frankenstein, sir.
It's sort of quite a trend for a while. Serpent children, people turning into wolves at midnight, that sort of thing.
What do you know about the author?
What do we know about the author? We know she was Mary Shelley, married to the poet Percy Shelley. Why has her story lasted so long? Todd Davies is an Ashland author and publisher and the founder of Exterminating Angel Press and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She'll be lecturing later this week about Mary Shelley's Frankenstein under the title Monster Hit, 200 Years of Mary Shelley. Todd Davies, welcome back to the studio.
Hi, Jeff. It's always great to be here.
So 200 years, is this something like the original horror story?
Well, actually, it is the original horror. It's the original science fiction story. It's the original fantasy story. It is the first story that a woman wrote when she was pregnant. It is the most, I mean, it has so many firsts. By the way, she wasn't married to Percy when she wrote this.
Oh, that's right.
That was a little, when you said she did it to entertain friends and family, that has a little, you know, sort of warm, fuzzy.
I was being gentle with
it. That was very nice of you. Yeah. It was a slightly different scenario.
So what was the scenario? Under what circumstances did Mary Shelley sit down and start cranking out this yarn?
Well, she had run away with Percy Shelley when she was, she hadn't even turned 17. She ran away with him. She was the child, she was unfortunately, and this goes to her story, she was unfortunately the child of a lone genius, and she married a lone genius. She ran off with a lone genius when she was 16. Became 17, got pregnant, lost the baby immediately, which has something to do with Frankenstein. Went back home, didn't get married because both her father had taught her that marriage was a terrible thing, and her husband, Percy, was already married to somebody else who was also pregnant at the time with his second child. They ran back again, back to Europe. They kept going back and forth. And it was a terrible, terrible year because a volcano had erupted that year. So it was an incredibly cold summer.
Oh,
everywhere.
And very wet, too, wasn't it?
Very wet. Mm-hmm. So they were all indoors. And Percy loved to frighten people. And so did Lord Byron, who was there. So Lord Byron said, "We will all tell a ghost story." And that was how she did it. She had to think of a ghost story to compete with those two.
Wow. So she was already in august company among creators of literary works.
And of course, they weren't august at that point. Lord Byron was hugely famous, but her husband wasn't known at all. And he wasn't her husband yet. I keep saying her
right,
husband.
Yeah.
She was Mary Godwin still then.
So was there any, were there things in her own life? I mean, you mentioned some of the influences that would have come along, but I mean, this is still pretty far apart from anything else that anybody had created up to that time.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's a coincidence that it was a woman that created it. Yes, everything comes out of her life, and I'm going to get into that on the Thursday talk, because I don't think critics really think about that enough. They focus a lot on the monster and on the technology, which is really funny. They don't focus on the moral questions that she raises in it and the incredible sympathy that she has for the monster. There is something that always makes me laugh. In the middle of Frankenstein, there is a long period where Frankenstein very articulatedly explains how he learned to speak English. He was living next to a loving family and listening to them teaching a Muslim girl how to speak English. He learned what humanity meant. He learned the depths of humanity, the heights of humanity. Okay, when the critics, I mean, for 200 years, the critics have been saying this. For 200 years, they've been saying, "That is so unbelievable." it made you laugh, doesn't it?
It did.
Every time, I mean, literally, you'll read a biography now and they'll say, "That part is the unbelievable part." And I'm like, okay, that part's unbelievable? All right, well, this tells us something about the culture for the last 200 years, that the other part is believable.
Wow. Todd Davies will be delivering a talk called Monster Hit, 200 Years of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein at the Hannon Library at Southern Oregon University this Thursday, May 10th at 4 in the afternoon. Your questions and comments welcome right here and now on the Jefferson Exchange. Your thoughts about Frankenstein, either in printed form or on the screen, because it sure has been around there for a long time. 200 years is why we're even having this discussion. You can join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So it seems like over time, no matter what we do to try to separate doctor from patient, when you say Frankenstein, the first image is the green thing with the flat-topped head.
That's right. And, you know, that came in very early. There were two different iterations of this book. She published anonymously the original story in 1819, which is what we're celebrating. 1818, sorry, which is what we're celebrating this year. Then she redid it, she expanded it, she changed some things, and she published it later in life in 1831 with an introduction. By 1833, people were calling the monster Frankenstein. That's not a coincidence. I mean, when something like that happens, it's embedded into the text. And the book is really about a doppelganger, that both they are two sides of the same coin, Frankenstein and the monster. And what Frankenstein is running away from is his self as well.
Does the creature ever get a name?
Not in the book.
In the printed version?
No.
Never.
No. And it's also really interesting how people read or don't read into the original text things that they just assume. I was reading a series of academic articles about it, and one of the academic articles said, there's a frame for it where Frankenstein, the scientist, is telling the story as he's dying to a captain of a ship that's locked in ice. And the person said in the academic article, the captain never sees the monster, so it must be a fantasy. It could just be a fantasy. Well, the captain does see the monster. The captain has a long conversation with the monster, and the monster says, and now I will go die. And I'm thinking, isn't that interesting? The academic who is studying it had such an idea about what had happened that she or he didn't even look at the text. And that happens over and over and over again with this story. Fascinating.
So I wonder how strong the response was in its time. I mean, it was so different from anything that had come before. And I wonder if you had the standard sort of, quasi-religious backlash, you know, protect your children from this ghastly book or things like that.
Yes, yes. I mean, it got absolutely horrific reviews. I can't remember exactly. The one that really impressed me, it called it a vile toadstool. I love that. The vile toadstool reeking with what is worse with the present day. Pretty good, huh?
Really?
Now my feeling is that when you get a review like that, you're onto something.
Uh-huh.
And she was.
So were there explicitly religious objections to it? You
yes.
know, Victor playing God, all that sort of thing?
Yes. The idea of a human making life was very objectionable, obviously. And this was around the same time as Darwin. This was around the same. This is also interesting. The word scientist didn't come into use until the 1830s.
Oh, right. So right around the time this book was out. Yeah.
Much after. I mean,
the revised version, yeah,
mm-hmm,
in this context,
she,
yeah.
What Victor Frankenstein is in the book is he's a philosopher. Mm-hmm. Science was regarded as an arm of philosophy. She's talking about the change to where it becomes also technological.
Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Did Mary Shelley make any money from her creation?
Poor Mary Shelley. You know, anybody who writes a really, usually, something that lasts, generally, they don't make any money. Now, why is that? I think a lot about that, but we won't get into that. We could do another half hour on that,
We
Jeff,
could,
sometime.
And I'm sure we will in time for the Ashland Literary Festival this
probably,
fall.
Probably, yeah.
So is your goal in life as a publisher, then, to make things that don't last? Because you can make money on them?
Well, if you become an independent publisher to make money, you are a fool. Really. Go sell. Become a hedge fund manager, indie press people. No, indie press people are wonderful because they know they're not going to make any money. Mm-hmm. You're just not. She had a very long struggle because after Percy died, he was fairly feckless, and he had what do you call it? Taken out loans against his inheritance, which he hadn't even gotten by the time he died. So she was totally in debt her entire life and had to raise a child and just wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote. And there was no copyright in those days.
Oh, sure.
Dickens was the one, I think, who insisted on copyright. God bless him. So she never got. They started immediately making plays of Frankenstein, mm-hmm. almost immediately. And she would go and see them. But no, there was no compensation, and there was no saying who it was by, even. You know, it was just the story was out there.
Mary Shelley's Frankenstein is the topic here at the Jefferson Exchange. The original book turns 200 this year. And Todd Davies from Ashland will be talking about it on Thursday at the Hannon Library at Southern Oregon University. The talk is called Monster Hit, 200 Years of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. That'll be at the Meese Room at the library Thursday at 4. You can join us now. Look, talk about your impressions of Frankenstein and or Frankenstein's monster and all those great phrases that probably just come from the movies like, she's alive!
She's alive.
800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. There's so much mystique that has piled up on top of Frankenstein, the original story, because of the movies. I mean, was the creature afraid of fire? Was there a lot of fire, burn? I mean, any of those things we associate with Frankenstein's monster now?
Well, the monster was terribly articulate in the book. I mean, really, you read
it. I have read enough of the book to remember that.
And
yes.
you're just like, wow. I mean, Victor didn't say, come to me, my beamish boy, when he was like that. I mean, really, mm-hmm. You feel really sorry for him. So no, what they did, and that's what the movies do. The movies are about drama and movies are about action. They are not about moral questions, really, except the very broad ones. So, and that was just tailor-made, you know, a monster, a scientist, monster kills, monster tries not to kill. You know, it was great for a screenwriter. Great for Boris Karloff,
right?
Man. Yeah.
Truly. Who owned the role with 1931. Was that the original?
Was that it?
I think
really?
So.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I'm surprised it was that long ago. How much did Percy Shelley have to do with the writing of the story? Did he function as editor? Did he function as co-author? There was some question, I understand, about his authorship.
He was not a co-author. He was an editor, and he was a very inspired editor. He helped her. He talked back and forth. Part of his attraction to her was that she was actually the child of two of the most famous revolutionists of her day and writers. Mary Wollstonecraft, who wrote Vindication of the Rights of Women, was her mother, and her father was William Godwin, who had written, I can't even remember, he's so many boring books about how we should get rid of everything, you know. So Shelley really, really admired that, and part of the reason why he was attracted to her was that she, to him, was the living embodiment of this, which was a little hard to take if you're the wife, you know.
Yeah,
a lot of pressure on the
loved one.
Yeah, so he had a very conflicted idea about it, but he and she says in the introduction that he wanted her to show her own literary genius because she was the inheritor of these literary geniuses. However, the book was published anonymously originally, and there was a rumor that he had written it, which he didn't do anything to stop. Now, what the biographers say is that he did this because he wanted to get more attention for the book. I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I think the book would have gotten enough attention if it had had her name on it. But, you know, hey.
There it is. It's got a little bit of a little Shelley, a little whiff of Shelley on there.
A little whiff of Shelley. He wasn't doing too well at that point. I mean, he was not as famous as he is today.
He was dead just 4 years after the publication of the original story.
Yeah.
Wasn't he?
Yeah, so. Drowned.
Wow. So once it was, at what point then was it revealed that Mary Shelley was the author? And was that shocking to people too?
It got out pretty shortly. Mm-hmm. I mean, it started to seep out. One of the reasons why she got such bad reviews was people assumed it was written by Shelley, and because it was dedicated to her father, and Shelley was an acolyte of her father. But it started to seep out that a 19-year-old girl, actually she was 18, when, you know, almost 19, when she wrote it, had written it, and that just freaked people out. I mean, nobody could actually believe it had happened.
Well, and they probably might have trouble thinking of that today even, but even, I mean, back then in the Victorian age, it was like, oh my goodness, women shouldn't be thinking because it can hurt their internal organs, you know, that sort of thing.
That's right. That's why women are so strong. Our internal organs are always having to bear all these things.
Well said, Todd Davies. Was there anything that Mary Shelley wrote afterward that enjoyed as much popularity or endurance anyway?
Never, but she did write. I mean, she wrote continually. She wrote for a living, and she wrote to support her son and put her son through school. They're pretty amazing books, but they are not of the same. And I have a lot of theories which you don't want to hear right now about why they weren't quite the same from heart to audience the way Frankenstein was. She wrote a book, unsurprisingly, about father-daughter incest that she then sent to her father, and he freaked out, hid it, and it was never published until recently, until this century.
Wow.
Yeah, Matilda, which is a pretty startling book. And she wrote a book, her last book was called The Last Man, which is about the entire world the population's been eradicated by a plague, and there's only one man left at the end of the book.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. That's some heavy stuff.
Yep.
So there have been so many Frankenstein movies. In your opinion, have any of them, like, hit it the nail on the head?
Young Frankenstein.
Sure.
And really, that's a perfect movie. Everyone should see that movie.
It is a great Mel Brooks. Yeah,
it's his best, I think. And it's a wonderful, I mean, it's a wonderful portrayal of Frankenstein.
It is more lighthearted than the others. I'll give it that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm more literary. I'm much more interested in the printed word than I am in movies, which is kind of surprising given that I was a movie producer for years. Or perhaps that's the reason. I don't know. My husband is a huge enthusiast for the original, when we say the original story, we mean the ARG, the bolts, which I also think is part of the appeal. I think a huge part of the appeal of the story is that we identify with the creature who's regarded as the hideous other and who's rejected. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially adolescents.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
That is identify with
tends
that.
Tends to ring true. The original subtitle was The Modern Prometheus. Is that right? And you, I understand, are working on Report to Megalopolis or The Postmodern Prometheus.
Correct.
Are you making a Frankenstein sequel then?
Yes. Well, it's my Frankenstein book. Yeah, it's coming out in August. I do a series, which you know about. I do a series of essentially fairy tales from another world where the fairy tales have actually formed the other world. And this is the fourth book in the series, and it's by my villain. And my villain creates a human being in a postmodern way, not the same way that the original Frankenstein did. Hijinks ensue.
Of course, hijinks ensue. So any final thoughts about Frankenstein and why we hold on to this as long as we have?
Well, and I'm going to talk a lot about that on Thursday, and I was thinking, boy, an hour is not enough. I should really give a class in it. There are a whole bunch of reasons, and it all goes to what the function of art is in the culture, which really is to bring things that are unconscious into consciousness. And the things that she was bringing into consciousness were amazing and were so prescient, and mainly because she was under such pressure, I think. And what I'm going to talk about on Thursday is the dream that she had that originated the story and why she had that dream. And what it had to do with a vision that her husband had had when he freaked out screaming and ran from the room. You'll have to come Thursday to hear.
All right. The event on Thursday is called Monster Hit, 200 Years of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. That'll be in the Hannon Library at Southern Oregon University, Thursday, May 10th at 4 in the afternoon in the Meese Room, not to be mistaken with the Meese Auditorium. The Meeses were quite generous to Southern Oregon University. Todd Davies is the editor and publisher of Exterminating Angel Press and working on a book of her own, as you heard, Report to Megalopolis or The Postmodern Prometheus, her own Frankenstein story. Todd, always good to have you here on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks so much, Jeff.